So Brazil has gone through very difficult times. I grew up in the 90s, and in the 90s we were still before the end of hyperinflation.
Welcome to this IMF podcast series about the work of some exceptional women in the field of economics. In this episode, how one such woman in Brazil helps people better deal with economic crises by helping them better understand them.
The currency would change names and units, and we had to really understand what this was about. I mean, I would buy magazines and the price would change every day, and you had to really take advantage of the moment right before they would readjust prices, and that's when it was really cheap and then you could buy everything you wanted. Every Brazilian had to know some economics at that point. I am Laura Carvalho. I am an economics professor at the Department of Economics at the University of São Paulo, and I'm also the director of the Research Center in Macroeconomics of Inequality.
Journalist Rhoda Metcalf sat down with Laura Carvalho to talk about her work.
In the world of Brazilian economics, you're kind of a superstar, right? You're a university professor. You're also a newspaper columnist. You have written many articles in major publications. And you've written this book on economics that was a bestseller. And you're still in your 30s. I mean, with your intelligence and energy, you could have done anything. So why did you become an economist?
Yeah, that's a very tough question. It is hard to tell when I got interested in economics. I mean, I think it was at a very early age. So Brazil has gone through very difficult times. I grew up in the 90s, so I lived through in the end of the 80s and in the 90s, years of very fastly growing prices, and this led to difficulties such as my parents would get their wages and we would run to the grocery store and we had to buy all the food for the entire month very quickly. Otherwise, the next day, the salary wouldn't be worth anything.
Right, because there was so much inflation.
Yeah, there was so much inflation that there was no way we could keep savings even. Like, you spend all the money you need the first day of the month, you get all the food, and then if there is something left, which wasn't usually the case, then you buy U.S. dollars, right? And you keep your U.S. dollars somewhere. And my dad would keep it inside the pocket of an old coat in the closet where all the dollars would be. I mean, there were several attempts by the government to stabilize inflation, and they would be announced on television, and the currency would change names and units, and we had to really understand what this was about. So it was really interesting times. I mean, people would say that every Brazilian had to know some economics at that point, and it's true.
I had read that there was a question that you asked at some point in your youth, and that really was a question you carried with you into your future. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The question of why are these people living in the street, right? I think that dealing with inequality has also been something very present to me in my childhood. I mean, my parents were progressives, and so it's also not the case that I had to figure out everything by myself. But
so they would talk to you about things.
They would talk to me about things, yes. And so we would face situations. I mean, there is a lot of street violence. We have huge problems with homelessness and other things that are very visible to a kid who is growing up in that environment. And these are issues that I was concerned about, I think, at a very early age.
Tell me a little bit about your book. It was surprisingly popular. I've looked for it. It's not really available in English that I can see.
No.
So why? What interested you about writing this book, and why do you think it was picked up as well as it was?
Yeah, that's a question I don't necessarily have an answer to. I mean, it was very surprising. I became a weekly columnist for the Brazilian largest newspaper, Folha de São Paulo, between 2015 and 2019, which was already something that happened a little bit out of the blue. I mean, I was an economics professor. I was doing my academic research. And then at some point, I got invited to write something for the newspaper. And then they liked it. And I wrote something else. And I always liked to write, but I never had really any practice. I started to do that at a weekly basis. And of course, once you start to do that, you start to learn how to communicate with the readers and readers that are not economists and who do not have any technical or any expertise in economics.
So you have to really learn how to boil it down, boil the ideas down.
Exactly, exactly. And this is something that even for an academic type of writing is very useful. I mean, I remember talking to friends, I mean, friends who are engineers, or I'm not even talking about someone who is, you know, not educated. And I would write a column and they would read that and they would say, yeah, I grasped like 50% of what you wrote. And I'm like, how? How come? I was writing like so very simple way. I mean, how come you didn't get it? Oh, yeah, no, but I got half of it. I mean, before I would get like 20%. And at some point you start realizing that things that seem very easy for us economists in our language are not. And the way economists really speak their own language is part of the problem, even in terms of how economics has
is perceived.
Yeah, exactly. And it's perceived. And also in a way, I think economists many times want things to appear very technical and not to be understood so as to somehow separate economics from politics, right? And to avoid having the entire society taking part in economic decisions and to understand that those decisions are sometimes political choices, right? And so okay. I think it's very useful for economists not to speak the language of the general public and to keep their authority.
But you had to learn in your columns, you had to learn how to talk to the regular person.
Of course, I had to learn and I had to write about Brazil, which was not necessarily my topic of research at that point. I was working on U.S. data. I was working in my research in other countries and theory and things that had not to do with current issues in Brazil. But then having to write for the newspaper also obliged me to have an interpretation of why we were in such a bad economic situation and why things happened, what the mistakes were in terms of economic policy, what's the political part of it. And writing about this and learning to write about this led me to decide to write a book. And I wrote a book about exactly why did Brazil go from the economic boom of the 2000s, where, you know, we were in the cover of The Economist with, you know, the Christ the Redeemer taking off. And then out of a sudden, we're in a very deep economic crisis that really put an end to all our hopes of becoming a high-income country in the near future, right? And the reasons for that, this is what I wrote about. And I think the book was a success, both because it provided an interpretation that was not necessarily in the common sense. Both in the political left and in the political right, the interpretations were either, I mean, it's all about economic policy mistakes or it's all about political boycotts. And I tried to give a more comprehensive approach to it.
See the intersections between all of these pieces.
Yes. And I think there was an interest in that interpretation. And at the same time, the easy language, many people tell me, readers of the book, they tell me that it's the first economics book they have read. And it's the first time they actually learned economic concepts. And I think the book had this role of an introductory to economics as well, to people who would never buy a textbook,
right,
or anything like that. And so, yeah, it sold very well. For an economics book, yeah, that's the most well-sold economics book in Brazil. And so, of course, it's on Brazil, so that's why it wasn't translated. I mean, there isn't that much interest in, like, the story of one particular developing economy outside of the domestic book market, right? But then the book actually ended up also having an academic importance that wasn't necessarily the goal when I decided to write.
I think a lot of economists avoid bringing politics into their economic research. But you have not. In a lot of your work, you look for the interconnections between the politics and the economics. And I wanted to ask you more about that. You know, why has it been important for you to bring politics into your research?
Yeah, I think some of the issues that have taken over the economic debate in the past decade or so, I mean, inequality being a major one, but also, let's say, the climate crisis and other issues that actually became important to economists. As this happened, I think it was impossible not to see and not to have clear that some of the obstacles to solve these issues are in the political sphere. And even the reproduction of inequalities have to do with how inequality transforms itself into political power, and political power actually influences economic power. And I think the democratic crisis that the world has been going through in the past years, the emergence of far-right movements and anti-democratic platforms around the world. I mean, this, I think, was something that economists in general have paid a lot of attention to and related to some of the ways and the wrong ways the profession has dealt with these issues, that would tend to consider all the choices as technical choices and understand the role of economic policy as something that was somehow separate from political aspects, and that has helped us lead into this chaos, right, and to this mess. And I think to understand the political effects and also the political causes of our economic phenomena is something that we need to do more. And I have been trying to do some of that, and the political economy has been part of the way I think about macro as well.
Of all the work that you've done up to this point, what do you think has felt the most important to you?
Yeah, so, I mean, this very big move, which was to become a public intellectual and someone who was trying to intervene in the economic debate, the book and so on, actually made me have a very hard time. I mean, to combine the strictly academic research and all the goals that we have in terms of publications in scientific journals with this other role. I mean, this was very challenging at first, right? And I think
being a sort of a populist explainer of economics.
Exactly. And I didn't want to be only doing this type of work. I also wanted to produce research and original research, and to actually have both at the same time was difficult. And I think what I like the most right now is that I somehow managed to put the two together. I mean, I co-founded a research center that is also a think tank within the University of São Paulo, which is the research center on macroeconomics of inequality. And the fact that we managed to build that, we managed to get enough funding. So now I have 15 graduate and undergraduate students as research assistants in the center. So we have a lot of people working. We have different international foundations that are backing us. And so we're doing work that is in that frontier between macroeconomics and inequality, and in that intersection, which I think is an intersection that we need to develop a lot more in the economic research. And there we're doing a lot of empirical work and work with a lot of policy implications that we managed to get into the media, that we managed to basically get into the political debates and even...
Can you give me an example of a policy debate that you've been involved in?
Yes. I mean, we built a database that allowed us to, for instance, measure the impact of the current public expenditures and taxes on inequality in Brazil. I mean, how expenditures on, say, different transfers or different policies, social benefits, and so on, how is it distributed in the population? I mean, who is getting the money and at the same time, who is paying for it? And this type of work allows us to simulate the impact of different tax reforms or different proposals for an expansion of social protection, both in inequality, but also we have a model that allows us to estimate the impact on GDP. This is one project, and we have publications that come out of this that are more, let's say, into the form of a policy note that is easy to understand. And so we had a lot of attention in the media when we launched those publications. And at the same time, we aim at, I mean, this is a presidential election year in Brazil. And there, of course, we're going to evaluate the different proposals from the different candidates and estimate the impact on inequality and on GDP of the different proposals. So this is something we do. But at the same time, we also do things, for instance, in the COVID-19 pandemic. What was the role of fiscal policy?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Didn't you produce an index around COVID and the vulnerabilities of the population?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the pandemic definitely had an effect of increasing inequalities, not only income inequalities, but also racial, gender, I mean, every dimension you look at. But then Congress approved this cash relief program, and it was the largest social program in Brazilian history, big enough to compensate for the fall in income at the bottom half of the distribution. So you ended up neutralizing the effect of the pandemic on inequality in 2020 in Brazil, thanks to that program. But then in 21, the program was ended, right? So the inequality underneath actually showed up. And now we are at very high and increasing levels of inequality and poverty and hunger. I mean, every measure we have. That means that, you know, another type of shock, and I don't only mean another pandemic, I mean different types of shocks, including the climate crisis, will hit even harder. So that's a trap that we really need to address. And the way to address that, I think, is really through economic policy. And that's the kind of work we've been doing. And that's both in at a think tank type of level, but also that ended up leading to academic research. And the fact that we do things that can turn into, let's say, they can have different layers. So things that are more to the general public, that are aimed at affecting and intervening at the public policy debate, and other things that actually become research, academic research that we submit to scientific journals. This is where what I really like at the moment, to be able to really cross that bridge with the same type of work, have an impact both to academic research and at a policy level.
That's great. Right. So looking to the future, you know, given the current economic and political trends, where do you think we're heading? I mean, both globally and in your own South American backyard.
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, I try not to be very pessimistic, because there is this line in which, I mean, if we are very pessimistic, then the kind of work that we're producing are not going anywhere, if we think that the political environment will not allow us to implement anything. And I mean, there are some reasons for optimism. I think the pandemic also taught societies and governments and policymakers many lessons. I mean, the type of questions and the type of proposals, for instance, that have been discussed, even if they weren't necessarily approved in the Biden administration, are a very clear example of how the economic thinking has changed a lot in the past years. I mean, some of these things were unimaginable 10 years ago.
Such as,
for instance, to understand that infrastructure has a human component to it. So the whole discussion about the care economy and how the state has to share its role with households in healthcare and the care for kids. And I mean, also the corporate taxation, for instance, increasing corporate taxation and abandoning the framework that saw a reduction in taxes as beneficial for the entire population. I mean, these are ideas that have been, I think, increasing even in economics, in the economics profession, in research. And now we see them, even if we don't see them necessarily become a reality. We can see that they are in the debate, and some of it will become a reality, right? And I think this is a reason for optimism. I think this has an impact around the world, and in Brazil, I can see a shift, a very clear shift in the way people are thinking about the role of the state and the role of democracy. So I do think that we're headed to a better place than what we saw in the past few years around the world, yeah.
Well, that's great. Laura Calvalho, it's been really interesting speaking with you. I think your work is really fascinating. And thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
Thank you, Rhoda. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Laura Carvalho is a professor of economics at the University of São Paulo and the director of the Research Center in the Macroeconomics of Inequality. She was speaking with journalist Rhoda Metcalf. Look for other podcasts in the Women in Economics series, including episodes with Dr. Lisa Cook, Jayati Ghosh, and Diane Coyle. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, leave us a 5-star review if you like what you're hearing. It'll help others discover IMF podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.